2 minutes and 15 seconds, you'd last 1 second longer than Punk did.
You're a punk, yeah you are. Dig it!
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the streak!
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat! You haven't been beat up properly! Woo!
Happy New Year! It's the first sound off here for 2017. Sunday, January 1st, episode 476 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off. I'm the Solid Monster. I hope everybody had themselves a happy, eventful New Year. It's not a happy New Year for Ronda Rousey. Broken Ronda lost in just 48 seconds the other night to Amanda Nunes, UFC 207. And for those who think, well, so much for her coming to WWE and being a draw. I've seen some fairly smart people saying this. Eric Bischoff, Jonathan Coachman. I disagree. If that's all she wrote for Ronda in UFC, and I don't think it is. I don't think she's fought for the final time. But if it is, let's say she's done with fighting. And she does want to, let's say, come over to WWE this year. And it wouldn't be full-time or anything, but maybe come in for a special appearance here and there. Believe me. She would be a very big draw. She'd be a bigger draw than pretty much anybody else they have right now, maybe with the exception of Brock Lesnar. Because as WWE has shown many times before, they do a far better job of booking part-timers and celebrities than they do their own talent. And so for that reason, I think she'll do just fine. Today is also the 10-year anniversary, to the day, if you can believe this, of Kevin Federline's victory over John Cena on Monday Night Raw. Kevin Federline, still undefeated against John Cena. His legacy will be forever stained by that one loss. He has yet to avenge that one loss, and frankly, I'd like for it to stay that way. I want to say thank you up front for all the great feedback I got to last week's, I was going to say nearly 3 hour show. It wasn't even nearly, it was over 3 hours by like 10 minutes. The longest sound off easily that I've ever recorded in the nearly 10 years that I've been doing this. And it's funny for all the railing that I do and we kind of do about 3 hour raws here. I turn around a 3 hour sound off. And yet the funny thing about that, not one complaint. I actually had some people who said, hey, we ought to get 3 hour sound offs more often. Yeah, no. No, I don't think so. I would not get too used to that. This week, it is the annual Sound Off Prediction Show. That, of course, is not all that we're going to be doing. We'll do that up front, though. It's become something of an annual tradition here where I kind of recap some of my predictions from the year prior, and then we do predictions for 2017. And so we'll do that this week. First, though, I want to talk about something up front. And people were kind of joking about this a lot. You know, especially last night as 2016 came to a close. What a terrible year, people said, 2016 was in terms of death and celebrities and all this stuff. And yeah, I wanted to talk about, you know, George Michael passed away, Carrie Fisher, Debbie Reynolds. 2016 was quite the star-studded year. And it got me thinking, you know, celebrities die every single year. But why does it feel like last year in particular just felt like an exceptionally bad year when it came to this kind of stuff? And even, you know, Harvey Levin, the TMZ guy, saw him the other day talking about, you know, we put these retrospectives together and we kind of recap all the deaths every single year. And, you know, celebrities die every year. But even when we went back and we looked at some of the big names, even we kind of looked at each other and we're like, wow, this was a really shitty year. And so I dug up some of the famous names that we lost last year, and you see why. Like, when you read these names, and this isn't even all of them. I'm not going to read the whole list to you. I'll be here for an hour. But these are just the ones that really stood out to me in terms of the people that, you know, that died last year. Muhammad Ali, arguably the biggest of the bunch, and he was older, and he had his health issues, but that was a big one, you know, Muhammad Ali dying. Elie Wiesel. I talked about him on the podcast when he passed away, Holocaust survivor. David Bowie, Prince, who was only 57, young guy. George Michael just passed away, 53, young guy. Alan Rickman, I mean, my God, Hans Gruber, still one of my favorite movie villains. Pancreatic cancer, dead. Gary Shandling, Gene Wilder, Alan Thicke, Florence Henderson, who was actually older than I thought she was. She looked good for a woman her age, I must say. She was also a one-time guest star on Raw. If you remember the skit that she did with Santino. Craig Sager, famous NBA sideline reporter. He fought like hell against leukemia. And I was sad to hear he died a few weeks ago. There's a great, great, great special that if you haven't seen it, I encourage you to go find it. Maybe they have it archived if you've got HBO Go. I'm pretty sure it was an HBO Real Sports special that they did on him early last year. My respect for that guy went up by 1,000 after I watched that show. It's pretty emotional stuff. I don't know that I could be as optimistic just in general about life as this guy was after the hell that he went through. So I was very sad to hear that he passed away. Gwen Ifill of PBS is another one I was really bummed to hear about, also from cancer, only 61. And then Carrie Fisher, and then her mom, only a day later, Debbie Reynolds, dead from a stroke. I didn't even know that Carrie Fisher was her daughter. I had no idea. Now, if you recall, I can tie this into wrestling, by the way. If you recall, WWE once bought a hotel that they were going to turn into a WWE hotel and casino. That was their plan, the first wrestling hotel and casino. They bought it for, I forgot exactly what they bought it for, but I know they made a profit off of it. It might have only been like $1 million. They ended up doing nothing with the property. They just sold it. They took the money and ran. But the hotel they bought was the Debbie Reynolds Hotel. Little wrestling trivia fact there for you. And then you have all the wrestler deaths. Of course, you have your wrestler deaths every single year. Chyna, 46, dead. Axel Rotten and Balls Mahoney, both of whom were the exact same age, 44, dead. Chris Travis, he was only 32, again, from cancer. Fuck cancer, by the way. If I can say that. I think I once made the comment here, if cancer was a person, I would beat him to death with my bare hands. And there is not a jury in the world that would convict me. I would walk right out the front door. So 2016 is behind us. It's a brand new year. It's a new day. Yes, it is. It's about time that you hear. This is about that time of year you hear people say, oh, new year, new me. All that new year, new me bullshit. I always find that funny. It's kind of like how you know, the parking lot outside the gym by me here gets crowded for all of 2 weeks and then goes back to normal. Yeah, that's a lot of fun. Nominations are still open for the Wrestling Radio Awards. If you want to help nominate the Solomonster Sounds Off, go to WrestlingRadioAwards.com. You'll see the Show of the Year category. You can type in the full name of the podcast in there, click submit. Then you can go back and there's a category for Male Interview of the Year. You can nominate our interview with Bob Holly, when I interviewed Bob here on the show. Just type in Bob Holly on Solomonster Sounds Off, or you could type in Diamond Dallas Page on Solomonster Sounds Off, either way. I did a bunch of really fun interviews last year. I really enjoyed the one with Bob, but DDP is always fun to talk to as well. So I don't know how much longer the nomination period is going on for, but it is still ongoing. You can vote once a day in each category every single day, so make a little reminder, and you can vote daily, WrestlingRadioAwards.com. You can also use our Audible link to cash in. Now it is a new year, and we are continuing our relationship with Audible. AudibleTrial.com/Solomonster. We had a whole bunch of you cash in for your free audiobook, and a lot of you have stuck with it. It's not like people just sign up to get the book. I mean, some people might, but some people really enjoy the Audible service, and they're still, you know, they continued on with their subscription, and they're paying, and they enjoy it. And so give it a shot. Think you might like it. And if not, like I said, whatever book you cash in on, because you get one free one, you can keep it even if you do cancel during the trial. You got The Death of WCW has been a popular choice of late. A lot of wrestler books up there. So audibletrial.com/Solomonster. You've got to put that link in and then go through the sign-up process. You won't be billed for 30 days. And like I said, if you're not happy, just cancel the trial and keep your book. You could also become a PayPal VIP. Donating on the Solomonster.com. You'll see the PayPal button on the right-hand side. $10 or more will get your wrestling nickname and a shout-out here on this podcast heard all over the world. I want to say thank you very much to John, Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, Chuck Lunatic Lentz, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, the Florida Freebird Brian Pissera, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Hytham the Equalizer Al Nawasser, Misfit Miguel Mendoza, Mass Grave Micah Harshaw, Downtown Kenneth Brown, Pull No Punches Alan Ragasa, Bobby the Wizard Waldrop, The Chosen Son Andre Smith, Aim for the Head Andrew Jorlog, Steven DDT Demoni, Brett Brickfist Broad, Taboo Alex Tangen, First Class LT Gilberry, Raymond the Mountie Medina, Velvet Revolver Robert Murray, the Montreal Mauler Patrick Pacheco, the Plymouth Party Animal Ben Chesters, and Jacob Messicomer. Thank you very much to everybody who made a donation this week. We had our biggest year yet in terms of PayPal, in terms of everything, in terms of the audience, in terms of the interviews and everything that we did. Hopefully 2017 will be an even bigger year. I've got some ideas. It'll be a fun year this year. Our fourth annual Royal Rumble pool in the Facebook group. We have a private group on Facebook. If you are not a member, well, I don't know what you're waiting for. You can find the group. You have to apply for membership, and I will approve you. We have a, what did he say? It was an extreme vetting. I have an extreme vetting process that I use. So if you're in queue, if you've been stuck in queue, by the way, for days or weeks or months, we have a queue of almost 4,000 people. We have over 4,000 people in the group, but we have almost another 4,000 waiting in queue. I know there's a lot of spam. There might be some bots in there, but there's also a lot of real people who unfortunately get stuck from time to time. So if you are one of those people, I would encourage you to cancel and reapply. And then, so that'll bump you to the top of the list. And then just send me a message so I know you are a real human being. And let me know that you're looking to get into the group and I'll get you in there, because that is the only way to participate in our Rumble pool this year. This is the fourth year in a row that we're doing this. Zach Holker, got to give him a lot of credit because he's been the one running it the last 4 years. Each year it's progressively gone up in terms of the number of participants. And I believe last year was our biggest year yet. I want to say that we had a total of just under 700. I think it was just shy of 700 people in something like 23 pools that we had for the Royal Rumble. Well, we still have many weeks left. There is no, you don't have to rush. There's no deadline this week. You can still apply to be part of the pool pretty much right up until before the Rumble, like that week or that weekend. I'm sure Zach can shed some more light on that. But we already have shattered our record from last year. And at last count, and it might even be a little bit higher than that by now, but when I checked before, we had 838 people. So we have a shot. I don't know if we will or not, but we have a shot, not just at 900, but 1,000. I would love to see 1,000 people participating in this thing. But we got over 830 so far, and many more yet to come. All you have to do is go into the group. If you're already in there, you will likely find the post pinned to the top of the page. I may unpin it when I put this week's podcast up, but, you know, in a couple of days, I'll pin it back up again. If not, you can just search in the group. Zach is the one who put the post up. All you need to do is like the post. You don't even have to leave a comment. You don't have to write, hey, I'm in, even though we've had over 200 people who have done that. All you have to do is like it. Just like the post and you're in. And the way it works is, however many pools there are, there's obviously 30 people per Rumble pool. And if one pool gets full, it spills over into a new one. You will be randomly assigned a number. If the person who enters the Royal Rumble enters at your number, so let's say you get Goldust, and he enters at number 27, and he wins the Rumble. I know, it's a terrible example, but let's just say, if you have number 27 in your pool, you win your pool. And then ultimately, all of the number 27s will go into a final kind of ultimate pool, and we will pull a random winner, and that person will be the winner of the entire Royal Rumble pool, and I will buy for you a Sound Off shirt of your choice and give you a shout out here on the podcast. It's a fun thing to do. Get in on that. If you're not in the group, like I said, find it, apply, I will approve you, and let's get that number up a little bit more. I also have two new Sound Off Gamer videos that went up this week on our YouTube channel, so if you're into the whole Sound Off Gamer thing, I know a lot of you are. You love me making a fool out of myself. You can go on the YouTube channel, those two are up there. I am practicing. I do want to practice. I do want to get better at this. I'm not sucking on purpose, although some people are like, well, you really shouldn't record these videos unless you know the controls. Yeah, but that where's the fun in that? Yeah, I want to learn as I go here. And if that means I make an ass out of myself, then so be it. So anyway, you can check those videos out. They're up on the YouTube channel. There'll be more of that to come in the future. All right, now, it is time for predictions in the world of wrestling for 2017 here on the Solid Monster Sounds Off. First, I have to thank Byron from upstate New York. Byron went back. he emailed me. He actually tracked how many predictions I got correct last year and how many I did not get correct. And the result was not very pretty. I think I did much better the year before. I remember there being some years there where I actually nailed it on a bunch of stuff. Last year, not so much, but it's always fun to go back and see, you know, what my ideas were back then, what actually came to fruition and what didn't. So, for example, I had predicted that John Cena would win the 2016 Royal Rumble. I still believe that John Cena would have won that Rumble, but unfortunately, he needed shoulder surgery, and so he was out of the picture, and Triple H ended up winning. I predicted that Seth Rollins would come back at SummerSlam as a babyface, but would end up going heel soon afterward. Instead, he came back a few months earlier as a heel and kind of botched the whole babyface thing right from the get-go. I predicted that Kevin Owens would win the WWE title in 2016. I was kind of right. He ended up winning the championship, but it was the Universal title, not the WWE title. I predicted that Sting would headline the WWE Hall of Fame and would be inducted by Ric Flair. That did happen. I predicted the Fabulous Freebirds would be in the Hall of Fame, which I think a lot of people did. And, of course, they were finally inducted into the Hall of Fame in Dallas. I mean, if it wasn't going to be in Dallas, then I don't know when you induct the Freebirds. So, of course, they went in. I also was thinking that Jushin Thunder Liger would be maybe an international inductee into the Hall of Fame, and they would put Lemmy of Motorhead in the celebrity wing, but that didn't happen. I predicted CM Punk would fight in the UFC, which he did, at UFC 200, which he did not. He fought instead at UFC 203. But I did predict he would finally fight in UFC and lose, and he did. I said that Jeff Hardy would come back to WWE. Instead, he re-signed with TNA for another year. I said Samoa Joe would finally debut in the Royal Rumble match, which is a prediction that I'm going to get back to here in a second. That did not happen. I said TNA would survive another year in 2016, which they did. Again, they're like a cockroach. You can't kill them. And I said that when the year ended, the WWE Network would have 1.6 million active subscribers. Instead, the number is, according to Byron here, the number is 1.458 million. So I was actually more optimistic than things turned out to be. I have to downgrade, I guess, my estimates from now on when it comes to the network. So that's not all of them. There were a few others I got wrong. Not the best year for predictions. Hopefully I could turn it around here in 2017. So let's get going here. And these are, you know, no particular order. They do mostly focus on WWE, but it was literally just stream of thought, stream of conscious, these things. I'm just kind of thinking about them. And I said, okay, let me just put a bulleted list together here. And just, that's it. Just spit them out, leave them alone, and read them out loud here on the show. We seem to go through this every single year with The Undertaker, thinking that this year will be it for him. This is going to be his final match. But if they do go with Undertaker and John Cena at WrestleMania, which I think they will and I think they should, I feel pretty comfortable saying that this is the end. I think WrestleMania 33 will be Undertaker's final match. There really is no bigger match left for him at this point. You know, John Cena has been the man in this company now for well over a decade plus. Some say Undertaker has always been the man, that he never stopped being the man. So you have these two guys, right at the top of the food chain here in this company. You put those two together with or without a title on the line. And that's a main event on any card. Now, I think we're past the point, especially, you know, once Brock Lesnar beat the streak a few years ago, we're past this point of, well, why are you going to waste it on John Cena? He's already a made man. He doesn't need the win. He doesn't need the match. Why don't you give it to a young up-and-comer? I think we're well past the point of that really meaning anything. I mean, nothing is impossible. If WWE conceived of this just wonderfully creative way to introduce a brand new person to the roster and they just were kind of rocketed up and they beat The Undertaker at Mania, then yeah, that might mean something. But I really do think that, especially once the streak ended, we're past that point of, well, Undertaker has to lose to like a new young up-and-comer in his final match. No, he doesn't. And I actually think that would be a waste at this point because I don't think it would have the effect that people think it would. You know, 5 years ago, maybe. But today, not so much. And so, Undertaker to me does not have to put anyone over. He doesn't have to put anyone over. He'll probably lose to John Cena. I do think if they do that match, he's losing to Cena. But if he loses, he's losing to the biggest star of WWE's modern era, right? There's certainly no shame in that. And I think, look, I don't know Undertaker personally. I don't know what goes through his head. He's never struck me as the kind of guy. You don't hear stories. You look at all the guys he's beaten, the guys he's lost to over the years. I don't know that he's, you know, I have to win all my matches. And, you know, I don't get that sense about him. And certainly people say these wonderful things and all the respect in the world they have for him. And I can see Undertaker being the kind of guy who would want to go out on his back, you know, in his last match and losing to somebody like Cena, who I'm sure he has a tremendous amount of respect for. You know, Undertaker was always looked at as this locker room leader. I'm sure he looks at John Cena and he sees a guy who he's comfortable kind of handing things off to. And he says, you know, here's a guy who's done an admirable job. I've seen a lot of clowns, a lot of different people come through these, you know, these doors over the years. And I'm sure he has an infinite amount of respect for John Cena and would have no problem if the plan was for him to lose to Cena at WrestleMania. So that's my prediction on that. And then a year from now, when I do a brand new sound off, when we're talking about who the Undertaker is going to face at WrestleMania 34, you can all laugh and point at me and say that I was wrong, okay, about this being his final match. But it really does feel like the end is finally near. That being said, Undertaker's not done just yet. And I have to amend an idea that I pitched last week on the podcast for the Royal Rumble. Last week, I pitched an idea. This is in response to a mailbag question that I got. I pitched an idea for Sami Zayn to win the Royal Rumble match. The final four that I proposed were Samoa Joe, John Cena, Braun Strowman, and Sami Zayn, with Zayn eliminating Strowman to win the match. Well, it took all of 1 week for them to blow up that idea with the announcement that John Cena is going to instead be wrestling AJ Styles at the Royal Rumble, and I assume he will not be in the Rumble match. Now, I will concede they could. That doesn't mean they still can't do the idea where it comes down to Strowman and Zayn, with Zayn winning. Even with Cena not in there, they could still do that. I suspect that Braun Strowman is going to kill Sami Zayn on Raw tomorrow night, and that feud may yet continue on for a little while longer. And yeah, maybe it climaxes with that big Rumble finish that I pitched. But I thought they would put Cena in the Rumble. He wouldn't win, but he would win the Chamber match the following month, and then he would get his title shot against The Undertaker at WrestleMania, because The Undertaker would beat AJ Styles at the Alamo Dome for the championship. And now, none of this is happening. However, I do still think Undertaker and Cena will be for the title at WrestleMania. But what all of this tells me, now that I see, okay, they're not going this way, they're going that way, what this tells me, and this is the actual prediction, this is not an idea that I'm pitching, this is the prediction part here. I predict, that The Undertaker is going to win the Royal Rumble match in 2017. My heart says Sammy, because I do like the idea, but my head says Undertaker. Here's a guy who I think is on his way out. He gets one last Rumble win, because he's won one of these things before. He gets one last Rumble win. He wants one last title run, right? Because John Cena's probably getting the championship back. If not at the Rumble, then I think at the Chamber show. He wants one last title run, and that's how the match with Cena comes about. And he falls short to John Cena at WrestleMania. That's how I see that whole thing going down. Now, this leads nicely into my next prediction, which I guess I already kind of gave away, but what the hell. John Cena will, in fact, tie Ric Flair's fake record of 16 world titles this year. And no, he will not go heel. That's something, I still can't believe that people talk about this. I loved the attitude that John Cena showed in that promo he cut on SmackDown this week. But why? Why do people continue to allow themselves to fall for even the slightest hint of a heel turn? How many years has this been going on for now? They've been jerking your chain for 10 years. Why do people do that? Why do they allow themselves to be conned like that? Why do they torture themselves? He's not turning heel. Period. End of story. It ain't happening. Move on. I predict that Roman Reigns will no longer be tweeting about his merchandise checks after being called out by John Cena for doing so. I'm sure you heard about this. Some fan uploaded video of Kevin Owens holding Roman Reigns in what else? A chin lock at the Raw show in Brooklyn. They had a house show on Wednesday. And as he's doing this, Owens is heckling a fan in the front row about how much his last merch check was for, which was $35,000, by the way. And you can see Roman Reigns corpsing as Kevin Owens is talking, and Reigns is just trying to cover up his face so we can't see him laughing. After the video was posted, Roman tweeted that, well, I was actually laughing at how little Kevin Owens made compared to the merch checks I used to have to split with the other members of the Shield. And John Cena saw this, and John Cena sent out a tweet of his own saying, while Roman Reigns was making fun of what people earn, I was at Georgia Tech to, quote, earn the day. And he included a video of himself lifting in the gym. Georgia Tech also happens to be where Roman Reigns went to college, ironically enough. So I guess from the guy to his heir apparent, the message there is pretty clear. Now, Reigns did respond back to Cena. He basically said, you have no idea what's going on here. And in so many words, he basically said, mind your own business. I don't think this is an angle to set up anything for WrestleMania, but you never know with these things. But I doubt it very seriously. I mean, this was all in response to a fan video. This is not some, I don't think this is some really well thought out angle or anything. It was a response to the video. Is there actual heat there? Who the hell knows? But John Cena made his thoughts on the issue pretty clear. Speaking of Kevin Owens, I just want to interject something here for a minute. This is not a prediction, but it's more of a rant. So WWE came to the Barclays Center on Wednesday for a house show, as I mentioned, here in Brooklyn. I didn't even realize they were in Brooklyn until that morning. I found out some friends were going. I'm like, huh, okay. Well, I didn't know they were coming to town. I knew they were at the Garden recently. But I have a couple of buddies who went to the show, and one of them mentioned that WWE, interestingly enough, was selling John Cena shirts at the concession stands, even though he is not part of the Raw brand. So, I mean, when you hear these stories about, well, John Cena sells more merchandise than anybody else in the company, of course he does. They always make sure his stuff is there, even when they run out of stuff for other people. I mean, didn't Randy Orton bitch about that on Twitter once? It's very easy to be the highest, you know, seller of t-shirts and shit in the company when they always make sure they're stocked up on your stuff. Anyway, there was something else that got people talking on that show. Before his match with Roman Reigns, Kevin Owens got on the mic, he's cutting a promo, and he singled out some grandpa in the crowd, and he made a comment about how you'll be dead in 5 years anyway. And this offended some people. Oh, that went too far. I loved it. He was being a dick because he's paid to be a dick. People need to lighten up. You know, Kevin Owens mouthing off to a kid in the front row or telling some old guy he'll be dead in 5 years. It's like Ric Flair calling someone fat boy, right? And talking about how I'm going to take your lady back to the hotel and make a woman out of her, right? These are heels being heels. If you can't handle this, then maybe wrestling, right? Maybe this wrestling thing isn't for you. Maybe you ought to find something else to do. And it's not just wrestling, you know. I mentioned Carrie Fisher earlier. Did you see this nonsense? This is unbelievable to me. Steve Martin, right? The actor, Steve Martin. Steve Martin this week was pressured into taking down a tweet that he posted as a tribute to his friend Carrie Fisher. I heard about this and I thought, oh my God, like what could this guy have possibly said? I saw the tweet. There was nothing wrong with it. He said, when I was a young man, Carrie Fisher was the most beautiful creature I had ever seen. She turned out to be witty and bright as well. Oh my God, what an asshole. What a horribly offensive thing to say. She turned out to be beautiful and smart. Give this man the gas chamber. People jumped down this poor guy's throat about how sexist it was of him to talk about her looks. It's like, fuck you. Fuck you. What the hell is wrong with people? Like, this guy was harassed to the point that he took down the tweet. He was bullied into the old tweet and delete. Do you believe that? People like this, they get offended so often by so many things, I think they forget about what they're even offended about. You know what offends me? The failure by their parents to use a prophylactic. Now we all have to suffer because of it. Pisses me off. All right, I'm off my soapbox now. I just had to get that out. It just pisses me off. Anyway, Hulk Hogan. Let's talk about Hulk Hogan. Contrary to him throwing his daughter, which I thought was hilarious when he threw Brooke under the bus. Remember when she leaked, TMZ caught her and she said, yeah, my dad is coming back at WrestleMania or something. And then Hogan had to go out and be like, she doesn't know what she's talking about, brother. you know, my daughter has no idea, dude. So he denied it. I do believe that in spite of that, he will in fact be making his return to WWE at WrestleMania 33. This would be about 2.5 years after WWE fired him over using the N-word on that leaked sex tape. I seriously doubt Hogan is going to walk out there and be booed by any significant portion of the audience. I understand totally if there are people out there who just don't want him back. They don't want to see him. They don't want to have anything to do with him because they were offended by what he said. You know, to some people, it's an unforgivable thing. And I understand that. I get that. But he's coming back. He's coming back. They're already incorporating his likeness back into commercials and such. I see Axelmania now is back on the house shows. They're letting him use that gimmick. He's coming back. And I think it'll happen at WrestleMania. And it should happen at WrestleMania if it's going to happen. And here's why. This year marks 30 years since he slammed Andre the Giant at WrestleMania 3. 30 years. He should be at that show. And I think he will be. Kurt Angle has been in the news lately. Kurt Angle has apparently been telling promoters that he is doing no more independent dates going forward, except for a couple of matches he already got scheduled, I think, with Del Rio. He's got one with Cody Rhodes. So existing bookings aside, he is no longer taking any new ones because he is going to WWE in April, which is an awfully specific thing for him to say. Now, this was in the Observer this week, and all the websites ran with it as big news this week. Reality check, people. This is Kurt Angle that we're talking about here. Kurt has said things like this before. In fact, numerous times Kurt Angle has claimed that he's had conversations with this guy in Triple H and Vince McMahon, and he's coming back, it's just a matter of when, and then nothing ever happens. Believe me, I would love nothing more than for my Royal Rumble idea that I pitched, what was it, like 3-4 months ago at this point? I pitched this idea where, this is before Goldberg came back, but they could still do it, you know, you're in the Rumble, the clock hits zero, Brock Lesnar's in there waiting on his next victim to come out, and all of a sudden Kurt Angle's music hits, and the Alamo Dome comes unglued, we get a little bit of a, you know, a little taste of Angle Lesnar again, if only until the next entrant comes out. I love the idea when I pitched it, I still love the idea, now I'm getting goosebumps here, but do I see it happening? No, I don't. I don't see it happening at this point. However, I do think, and this is my prediction here, I think Kurt's, you know, I don't want to say he's full of crap. Maybe he honestly believes he is coming back to WWE in a few months. I don't think he is. But what I do think is that we will see Kurt Angle back in WWE this year. But I think it's going to be as the cover boy for 2K18. You know, the next video game, they've been doing this the last few years. They're always looking for that one big name to bring back and to market the video game around. And they don't have a lot of guys left. They're running out of guys. And I think Kurt Angle is going to be that next guy. That, as what happened with Sting and now with Goldberg, will lead to one more run, maybe a couple of big matches, and he'll get the Hall of Fame induction in 2018. But I just look at this year's WrestleMania coming up. They've got Goldberg as the special attraction who they're bringing back, right? It's probably going to be Goldberg and Brock. You've got Undertaker. He's still an attraction. Probably him and Cena, but whatever Undertaker is doing is always a big deal. But Goldberg is kind of that one guy this year, for the year that they're bringing back. I don't know that they need Kurt Angle on that show. I don't know that they want to waste another attraction on a show where they already have one. And like I said before, realistically, who's even left for them to use for the game if they don't want to just use their own guys, which I think says a lot, frankly, about their own full-time guys on the roster today that they keep finding these old guys to bring back to put on the cover of these video games. What the hell does that say about their main roster today? But if that's what they want to do, they don't have a lot of guys left. I don't know who else they bring in, if not Kurt. Who else is left? Realistically, who else is left? Hogan? Oh, wow, yeah, that'd be going back in the old bag of tricks there. There aren't very many left. And if Kurt was coming back in April, I doubt WWE would be very happy about him telling people this. Because you know people are going to tell people who are going to tell more people, it's going to leak out, and that's going to piss them off. I don't know why he would do that. Now, if I'm wrong, and I've been wrong before, but if I'm wrong and Kurt does come back in April, let's say he actually does. Well, then what's he coming back in April for? Is he going to make an appearance at WrestleMania? Is he going to, you know, what are they going to do? I would think that if he was coming back in April, the idea that makes the most sense for it would be to be on the Raw after Mania. The very next night for him to come out and replace Mick Foley as the Raw GM. Because let's be honest here. You know Foley ain't lasting the year as GM. I'm surprised he's lasted this long. But he's already, you know, talking about how he's like in agonizing pain just going from airport to airport. You know, and I'm going to talk about that whole Foley situation when I get to the Raw review about his hip and all that stuff. But you know he ain't going to last forever. He's had a very uneventful run as the GM. He's doing his best, but, you know, he's had a lot of bad nights. He's had a lot of rough nights as the GM. So his time, he's on borrowed time in that position. And you know, Stephanie, it's just a matter of time before she slaps him right off that show. And I think Kurt would be a good trade-off. I think Kurt would be good in that spot. He's already got, you know, GM experience. Remember, he was on SmackDown as the GM many years ago. So if Kurt is telling the truth, I think that's the role for him. The thing is, I don't think he is. I think the monster push for Braun Strowman will continue. It will lead to a babyface turn, and I believe that it will lead to a match with Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam in Brooklyn. I believe AJ Styles will become the biggest babyface on SmackDown in a matter of months. Some might say he already is. Officially, though, I don't think he would be considered a babyface, but that will happen soon. I predict Finn Balor, when he comes back, he will go heel, and in doing so, I think he will help drag his buddies, Anderson and Gallows, out of the frickin' doldrums they've been in to form the Balor Club, or whatever name they want to end up calling it. I predict that Charlotte will end the year as a 7-time Raw Women's Champion. She's at 4, I believe, right now, so that's probably a conservative estimate on my part, but I'll say 7. I also think Bayley wins her first championship. I think Sasha Banks goes heel. I think Asuka stays right where she is for another year in NXT. And I think Summer Rae, when she comes back, because she's out hurt right now, when she comes back, I believe that Summer Rae is going to have a breakout year. I really believe that. She's got talent. I saw it in NXT. She has yet to be given a fair shake on the main roster. I know she did the stuff with Rusev for a while. Remember Ruru and all that crap. But she wasn't wrestling. I'm talking about as a wrestler, as a performer in the ring. I think she could be a big beneficiary of this brand split. Kind of like how Becky Lynch has been a beneficiary of it. And how Alexa Bliss has benefited from there being two brands. I think Summer Rae would fit into that category as well. And I think she'll come back from her injury. She'll work her way into the top mix on that Raw brand. Samoa Joe, I know I sound like a broken record because this was my prediction last year, but I really mean it this year. Samoa Joe will debut in the Royal Rumble match, and I think he will be part of the Raw brand. Meanwhile, Shinsuke Nakamura, I believe, will also make his main roster debut, although a little bit later on than Joe. I think he'll be part of the Blue brand, and I think we will get our first Nakamura-AJ Styles match in a WWE ring before the year is over, even though I personally would save that for next year's WrestleMania, but I think it'll be happening sooner than that. Adam Cole, I predict, will leave Ring of Honor to be a top star, if not the top star, on the NXT brand. I would have said the same thing for Jay Lethal, but I saw that he just signed a new 2-year deal with ROH, which, you know, congratulations to him, but that kind of surprised me. I, you know, look, WWE's loss is Ring of Honor's gain. I think the guy deserved to be on the big stage a long time ago. I thought he did very well when he was in TNA, and then all of a sudden, just like that, poof, he was gone without any real explanation as to why. Even though supposedly Eric Bischoff liked him, liked his impersonations more than anything. But, you know, he seemed to be a well-liked guy. I guess not well-liked enough. This was back when Bischoff was in a position of power in TNA. But I would still love to know why that happened. And we're going on, what, 5 years now since he got fired from TNA? I think Jay would probably like to know, too. He basically said as much when I interviewed him on the show a number of years ago. This is probably back in 2011 or so when I interviewed him. Still never really got a straight answer about that. Money in the Bank, we found out this week, will be a SmackDown brand pay-per-view this year, June 18th in St. Louis. Man, SmackDown got TLC, Elimination Chamber, and now Money in the Bank. Raw got Hell in a Cell. That hardly seems like a fair trade. Anyway, I predict that Baron Corbin will win the Money in the Bank briefcase this year. It's impossible to say who might be drafted to SmackDown before then. That could change, you know, obviously change my mind on things, but I was thinking Bobby Roode would be a good fit for that briefcase, but it would be a shame if they called up Bobby Roode before they called up Nakamura, because Nakamura spent so much more time down there than he has. And if they do call Nakamura up, then I think Bobby Roode has to stay down there longer. So I'm picking Baron Corbin. And I don't see Baron Corbin as the sneaky type either. He's not one of these guys who's going to run to the ring and cash in when the champ is down. I think it'll be more like an RVD cash-in where he calls his shot in advance, so to speak. And I do think that we will see Baron Corbin win the WWE title when he cashes in. I do not think that we are getting a Women's Royal Rumble match this year, but I do think we are going to get our first ever Women's Money in the Bank match. And I just pray to God they don't kill themselves. I predict the New Day will go their separate ways this year. There won't be some big elaborate turn. It'll be a friendly split. Xavier Woods will become part of the Cruiserweight division. And Big E will be the one, not Kofi, who positions himself for a big singles push. Probably for the U.S. or the Intercontinental title. I predict NXT will go live from Full Sail University every week on the network by the middle of this year. You see what WWE is doing with this UK tournament this month and possibly getting a new weekly show out of it. I think before this year is out, they will be doing the exact same thing in Japan. There will be a similar tournament taking place there that could lead to a weekly show, but I think Japan is next. And the UK thing, I do think it'll turn into a weekly show. It's obvious they want it to. This thing would have to be a colossal flop for them to just abandon all of their plans. So I do think it's going to become a weekly show on the network. I think Nigel McGuinness will stay on as an analyst. He'll be one of the announcers for it. And I'm going to say that Wade Barrett is going to be signing to come back to WWE, not to be on the main roster, but Wade Barrett will become one of the main stars on their UK show on the network. So that way he can work from his home country, and he can actually have a real chance for the first time at being a top star, or at least the first time since he had the feud with John Cena, which is going on 6 or 7 years now. He'll have a real chance to be a top star on one of their brands. And I think they would probably also like the idea of having a guy who, maybe he wasn't a main eventer, but he's a guy that, you know, the casual fans would remember. They would recognize him. And I think they would want somebody like that on the show. And so given his ties to the UK and given that he's a great friggin' talent, I mean, he kind of got a little injury prone there, but I think that Wade Barrett comes back and he's part of this show. I predict that WWE will announce WrestleMania 34 in 2018 for U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis, home of the Minnesota Vikings. Brand new stadium there. They just opened up this past year. I believe it fits up to 70,000, which is plenty of people to fit in there for a WrestleMania. If they have not already made the announcement by the time you hear this, because my understanding is that Anthem Sports officially becomes the new owners, or became, I guess now, the new owners of TNA as of today, January 1st. And I predict that in 2017, there will once again be lots of fucked up stories about this company that come to light. Still lots of drama, lots of turmoil. Just because Dixie's out of the picture doesn't mean that's going to come to an end. But in the end, TNA will survive another year like they always do. I'm already reading about how they're already behind on paying some of their production people. It's unbelievable. It's just some things never change. It's just unbelievable. I don't think they will still be on Pop TV when the year ends. I think they will be off the network before the end of 2017. They will probably end up on the Fight Network because Fight Network is owned by Anthem. So I could definitely see them wanting to bring Impact to their station. And also, here's a prediction, and it pains me to say this because I do like the show a lot, but I predict that TNA will outlive Lucha Underground. I think this could be the last year. When I read that story on the next season being delayed, season 4, all the wrestlers thought they'd be taping already for it. Now we're hearing that they won't begin filming until October. Okay, when I read that, that to me was a major red flag. That worries me. The fact is, the show is not growing, right? It's still stuck on El Rey. It's got a relatively tiny audience, even tinier than TNA. And you look at the production on the show, you know, it's filmed in a very slick way. It's got to be costing them a lot of money to produce that show and pay all of the talent. And I'm not just talking guys like Rey Mysterio, who I'm sure make a shit ton of money, but you know, they're paying all of these guys good money and the production costs. It's a lot of money. And the fact is, if you're not growing, you're not touring, you're not doing pay-per-view, there's nothing going on there, how can they make money to keep this thing going unless they suddenly just get this big infusion of cash? So I don't see it. So I predict TNA will survive, Lucha Underground will not, and it makes me sick to even say that. I predict that the broken brilliance of Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy will remain in TNA. As much as I would love to see them take their act to WWE, I just don't think they would have the creative freedom that or the schedule that they would want. And they're in a position like the Young Bucks were. A lot of people hate on the Young Bucks. Right? The thing about the Young Bucks, I respect the hell out of these guys because they made a big living for themselves and they never set foot, aside from a dark match, in WWE. They never set foot on WWE television one time. And these guys have made themselves a shit ton of money. They sell a shit ton of merchandise. They work in the promotions they want to work for. They do dates in PWG. They go to Japan. They work Ring of Honor. They still go all over the world. They still have a hot act. They've kept themselves relevant. They kept people talking about them, whether they love them or they hate them. I have a lot of respect for the Young Bucks. And I think that Matt and Jeff, who are bigger stars than the Young Bucks are, and they had the exposure for many years from WWE, are in a position now, here in their late 30s, 40-ish, whatever they are, where they can do whatever the hell they want to do. They've made their money, especially Matt. Matt's made his money. Matt just stumbled on this brilliant idea that paid off for him. He's turned his life around. And I think it's a great thing that they've built for themselves. And if WWE is not willing to give them the schedule and give them the freedom that they want, then they can say, you know what, up yours, and they can do whatever they want. And so I think they're probably happy in TNA. I've heard Jeff talk about how he would like to end his career in WWE. He wants to end with like a Hell in a Cell match against The Undertaker at WrestleMania. That ain't happening. So I do think eventually they will be back in WWE, but I don't think that it will be in 2017. I predict Ryback will be the next big relatively big ex-WWE name to sign with TNA. I predict Vader will lose close to 100 pounds doing DDP yoga, and both he and Diamond Dallas Page will each be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame this year. I also think Shaq goes in as the celebrity inductee, which makes sense. I mean, they're in Orlando this year for Mania. Shaq's going to wrestle Big Show most likely. He'll be there. Why not put him in as a celebrity inductee? And finally, Jimmy Snuka will still claim not to know who the president is and will be caught in his skivvies playing with carburetors in a junkyard somewhere, thinking that they're coconuts, or more accurately, wanting people to think that he thinks they're coconuts. And the judge presiding over his case will, in fact, end up declaring him incompetent to stand trial in the death of his mistress. SmackDown Live. Let's cover the A show first. It finally happened. For the first time since the draft show in July, SmackDown Live beat Raw in the ratings. 2.88 million viewers to Raw's 2.85 million. Barely, but a win is a win. I'd like to think it had to do with the fact that A, SmackDown is just a better show lately, and B, SmackDown actually spent time hyping a bunch of big matches in advance, plus John Cena's return I'm sure didn't hurt. Although, you know, the last time John Cena, I was reading up on this, the last time John Cena made a big comeback to SmackDown was a few months ago, back in September, and Raw still won. So you can't just say, well, it was all John Cena. I don't think it was just all John Cena. But there is something to be said, I think, for taking the time to actually promote some big things in advance for a week or two. And to their credit, they have done that with Raw tomorrow night. They're promoting the return of Goldberg. They're promoting a Last Man Standing match with Braun Strowman and Sami Zayn. So I would expect things to probably go back to normal. Although, don't they have like some bowl games coming up? It's that time of year they have like the college bowl games. That's probably bad news for Raw. I don't know if that's this week or not, though, but if we're being honest here, it's really sad that people, like, I was happy when I heard that SmackDown beat Raw, and it's really sad that there's genuine enthusiasm about this when we're talking about 2.8 million viewers. Both shows under the 3 million mark, and there's all this happiness, SmackDown beat Raw. It's like, that's a pretty damn sad fall from grace from where they were even just a decade ago. Like, forget the Monday Night Wars, just a decade ago from where they were then to where they are now. It's unbelievable. But, you know, this is the world we live in now where Raw, you know, let's say Raw pops a 3.1 and that's good enough for them to be doing cartwheels inside Titan Tower. You know, at one time that would have been considered a horrible number. And yes, part of that is social media and you can see clips on YouTube and stuff. But to me, that's too simplistic an answer. There's more to it than that. But anyway, for this past week at least, the win was well-deserved, I thought, because this was an excellent edition of SmackDown, easily the best in weeks. The Twitter poll I threw up really bears it out. 2,000 people voted in the poll, 95% thumbs up, only 5% thumbs down. One of the most lopsided polls I've ever done. Now, you compare that to Raw this past week. You compare that to the poll I put up for Raw. Raw got 19% thumbs up, 81% thumbs down. I have not seen a beatdown that bad since... Friday night, I guess. A whole 48 hours ago when Ronda Rousey got her ass whooped. John Cena. In the predictions, I mentioned loving the attitude that he showed in his promo. He did come back on this show, first time in a couple months. And I did. I loved the attitude. You know, it was, in a lot of ways, it was the same old John Cena, but then toward the end there, he got that little chip on his shoulder. He said, "I am sick of hearing about the new era." He said, "This is the My Time Is Now era." Which begs the question, if this is the My Time Is Now era, then what the hell was the last 12 years? He challenged the winner of the Triple Threat main event later in the show to a championship match at the Royal Rumble. There was an ad going around this week, I'm sure some of you saw it, that was promoting a John Cena, AJ Styles 2 out of 3 falls match for the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. WWE has since denied that it is real. They said it's a fan-made fake. But I wonder, you know, if they're doing Styles and Cena in San Antonio, I don't think it's that far-fetched to think that there would be one more match, especially if Cena wins, right? AJ would be entitled to a rematch. I think it's very possible we could end up with a 2 out of 3 falls match next month. I think maybe they're covering their, you know, they're trying to cover their ass here on this. I would not cast that off as fake news just yet. But I did enjoy the Cena promo. We had the Fatal 4-Way Elimination match, really good. American Alpha... excuse me, winning the tag team titles from the Wyatt family, also beating the Usos and Heath Slater and Rhino, who, you know, at this point, you know, they've pretty much run out of gas as a team. I don't know how much longer they can run with that. Frankly, I would much rather see Santa Rhino. I don't know if you saw Talking Smack a couple weeks ago. They had Rhino in a Santa suit, basically being like Bad Santa and burping and drinking and just being generally belligerent. It was actually very entertaining. And I know Santa is not exactly a year-round gimmick, but I would not mind seeing Santa Rhino pop up on the show. I'd give Santa Rhino his own talk show segment. He was so good on Talking Smack. Let's map this out here. Okay, I know Christmas is a seasonal thing, but would it really be such a bad thing if they had, let's say, the North Pole? A talk show segment like Brother Love used to have his own set. The Funeral Parlor used to have its own set. Have one decorated as like Santa's workshop. You can have Santa Rhino in there hosting, and he could be drinking, brown bagging it the whole time and just interviewing different people. It'd be different than Ms. TV, right? It would be it'd be very, you know, very much a different kind of show. I wouldn't mind seeing that. That could be a lot of fun. Be better than this Heath Slater Rhino bullshit at this point. But American Alpha are the new tag team champions. This shocked the hell out of me. I was not expecting the Wyatts to drop the belts this soon. And American Alpha, they are the beneficiaries of Zack Ryder getting hurt, no doubt about it. It makes me wonder if the Hype Bros actually were going to win the tag team titles, strictly because it was part of this... Clearly there's this long-term breakup angle they're going to be doing with Randy Orton and the Wyatts. This is just the next step. I've been enjoying the Orton Wyatt stuff. I still think that ultimately this is a plan on Orton's part to break up Bray Wyatt and Luke Harper. I think he's trying to drive a wedge. He's taking his time in doing so. I don't think he's under some sort of spell or anything like that. But we'll see as the storyline progresses. So, who knows? I can't see the Hype Bros being the tag team champions, but we'll never know. But it's safe to say American Alpha would not be the tag team champions right now. Had Zack Ryder not, I think he ruptured his patella tendon. And I'm very happy for them because I feel like American Alpha, since they've come up to the main roster, has just been kind of stagnant. Not that they're like burying the guys or anything, but they had some buzz around them, and that buzz kind of wore off a bit when they came up to SmackDown. And they didn't have a whole lot going on, and they were losing matches, and it's like, oh man, like these guys are special, both of them. Jordan and Gable both have the potential to go on to become big single stars. And maybe Jordan more so because he's got the look and he's bigger, but you know, why are they not doing more with these guys? Well, now they're the tag team champions, and so I'm happy. I'm very happy for them. I'm happy to see them in that position. I think you put American Alpha in the ring with almost any other team, you're going to get a great match out of it. It's one of the reasons why I hope when the Revival gets called up, which I probably should have thrown into the predictions earlier, but I do think the Revival will be up in the next few months, and I hope they go to SmackDown, because I think the matches they and American Alpha can have, like the matches they had in NXT, would just blow pretty much everything else out of the water. So I enjoyed this match. The way it all unfolded here was that there was a little bit of a miscommunication at the end of the match involving Harper and Orton. Randy Orton was actually the one who took the pin in this match. It was not Bray Wyatt. It was not Luke Harper. It was Randy Orton who hit took the Grand Amplitude and got pinned, which also surprised me. And there was dissension in the ranks when the match was over. You know, what are you doing? You distracted me. And obviously this is leading to something. And this was the next step in that process. Alexa Bliss beat Becky Lynch. This was an interesting match. There was one point in the match where Becky Lynch used the Pentagon Jr. arm breaker on Alexa. And wouldn't you know, her arm didn't break. Totally exposing the business this woman is. Later on, she put Alexa in the disarmer. Now, in the middle of all this, La Luchadora made an appearance. And of course, we saw Becky Lynch unmask as La Luchadora the week before. And so now it's like, who is this? There's someone else under the mask. We never did find out. Not this week, anyway, we didn't find out. Although there was some sleuthing going on online. Different people discovered that it was probably Deonna Purrazzo, who I guess was under the mask. They looked at her nails and her nail polish. Just really freaky shit. But it may well have been Deonna Purrazzo. I do not expect Deonna Purrazzo to be unmasked as La Luchadora. To me, even if it was her under the mask when they were kind of showing her like up close, it almost looked like Tamina to me. And I know Tamina is, I think, ready to come back. She had a knee surgery many months ago, and I don't know what brand she'll be on. But I would not be surprised to see La Luchadora unmasked ultimately as Tamina, as a way to reintroduce her into the storylines. I don't know that, I don't think this is a way to get Mickie James on SmackDown. I think it's, they probably have other ideas for her, but it could be Tamina in the end. But she puts Alexa in the disarmer. And I think Alexa got her foot on the ropes, and so she got out of it. And Alexa walks to the other side of the ring holding her arm as though her arm is like legit hurt. And they get a shot of the arm, and her arm, oh, oh my God, her arm looks like it was dislocated. It looked fucking disgusting. And then on Talking Smack after the show, Renee Young is talking to JBL about it, and she just goes, well, is she double-jointed? And then it made all the sense in the world. It's like, way to ruin the illusion, Renee. Thanks a lot. You know? It's like, obviously, but come on. So, it looks sick as all hell, I have to say, and I'm sure she is double-jointed, and it just looked cool. It looked sick, and it looked cool, and it made the disarmer, and it made Becky look like a beast. But in the end, because La Luchadora then ended up, I think, ramming Becky's head into the turnbuckle, Alexa was able to hit a DDT, she got the pin, and her arm is okay. We had Renee Young and Miz. Speaking of Renee, they did continue the storyline there. Renee was called upon to interview Miz backstage. Miz had a bunch of security goofballs kind of guarding him, and then he told them to go run off. And then the camera pulled back, and we saw Dean Ambrose in a security shirt. He beat up all the security guys. So they are continuing the feud with Ambrose and Miz. In fact, I think they have an Intercontinental title match set up for SmackDown this week. The main event was AJ Styles, Baron Corbin, and Dolph Ziggler, triple threat for the WWE Championship. I thought they had a really good match. I really enjoyed this a lot. Went 20 minutes. I had people tweeting me, I think you may need to amend your top 10 matches of the year list. It's like, no, actually I don't. Not every good match is match of the year. The match was good, but it wouldn't even crack the top 15 for the year, I don't think. Top 20, maybe. Top 15, no way. I love the spot where they got Corbin laid out on the announce table, and Ziggler and Styles briefly worked together. They both jumped off the barricade onto Corbin through the table. It made sense, too, because Corbin was dominant for a good part of the match, and so, you know, it makes sense for the two smaller guys to kind of gang up together and take the guy out. Spot of the night came with Corbin hitting Styles with the End of Days at the exact same time Ziggler jumped up and dropped Corbin with a zigzag. I thought that was just masterful, the way they pulled that off. That was a very cool-looking sequence right there. Corbin hit Ziggler with the End of Days. Styles then immediately caught Corbin with a phenomenal forearm. Corbin rolled out of the ring, and Styles covered Ziggler to steal the pin and get the win. AJ showed no ill effects from his ankle, so he seems to be okay. Corbin, I thought, looked like someone who belonged here in this match. Maybe it's just the fact he was in there with two really, really good workers, but I think Baron Corbin deserves more credit than that. He's not quite there yet. He's still young. I still think he's somebody who could have benefited from having an NXT title run. He never did. They shot him up to the main roster. But he's doing well. You know, he's getting better. He's doing well as a talker. He's very confident. He doesn't seem timid or shy or stumbling over his words. And there's something about him when I hear him speak, especially, and maybe more so when he's on Talking Smack, because it's not a scripted show. He just seems like he's in his element. He's speaking from the heart. Like, he's kind of a douche and he doesn't care. He wants to be in the main events. He wants to have the title. He wants to make money. And that's all he's there for. And I think he's a good talker. He's a good talker. He's getting better. I think he'll get better probably working more matches with people like Dolph Ziggler and AJ Styles. But he looked like a guy who belonged in the main events. And that's why I do think he's going to end up being Mr. Money in the Bank this year. And I do think before the year is out, he'll end up with the title. But I thought this was a real star-making performance for him. So John Cena came into the ring to congratulate AJ after the match, shake his hand, which Styles accepted. And reluctantly, but he did accept the handshake. And so their match is now official for the Royal Rumble. Top to bottom, I just thought this was a very enjoyable show. They advertised it almost like a pay-per-view. And I thought it delivered like one. This is the A show right here. You know, you never know how much longer this is going to last for. But for the time being, there is no doubt that SmackDown is the A show. And Raw this year has got to play catch up. And speaking of Raw, we may as well talk about Raw now. Raw was live from Chicago, Illinois this past Monday night. Actually, before we get into the poll and all my Raw thoughts, let me talk about Mick Foley. Mick Foley was not on the show this week. He is due back tomorrow night, but he caused a bit of a stir this week when he announced that he posted a Facebook blog and he announced that he planned to have hip replacement surgery, but contrary to reports, he has not yet had the hip replacement surgery because he currently has no health insurance. He says he had insurance this past year, but he missed one payment and they kicked him off and now he has nothing. And he is hopeful to find insurance this year, but he doesn't know how an insurance company is going to feel about paying for a hip replacement when that hip should have been replaced a long time ago. Well, if it's a pre-existing condition that he's worried about, he better find that insurance fast before Congress decides to do away with it. Although, I would guess any changes they make to healthcare, they won't actually take effect for a while. But you never know with these numbskulls. You just never know. I mean, 18%, by the way. And no, that isn't the thumbs up rating for, actually, it might have been the thumbs up rating for Raw. I think Raw might have gotten 18% thumbs up. 18% was actually the approval rating for Congress as of last month. 78% disapproval. When your congressional approval and disapproval ratings mirror the thumbs up, thumbs down ratings for Monday Night Raw, you know you've got a pretty shitty Congress. But I digress. The bigger question is, what is going on in Mick Foley's life that he would miss a payment? That should not be happening. Lots of people have been directing their venom at WWE. They think it's ridiculous. They won't either help pay for the operation or that he doesn't have health insurance as part of his contract. The problem with that is that, as Foley admitted in his blog, he doesn't have a contract with WWE. He is working on a handshake deal with Vince McMahon. He is the Raw GM for as long as he enjoys the job and for as long as WWE is happy with the job that he's doing. That is the agreement. He says it is a $60,000 operation. He may well have to just go ahead and pay for it out of pocket, but he wants to explore all of his options before he shells out that kind of money, which sounds reasonable enough. You know, he basically says, look, I may have to pay for this myself, but if I can bring the cost down somehow or get covered a different way, I'm going to put this off a little while longer and I'm going to look into, you know, what my options are. To all the people saying, you know, Foley made a lot of money, he made millions, surely he can pay 60 grand for an operation. I don't care if you're a millionaire or not. $60,000 is a lot of freaking money. And he's got a family, right? He's got three kids. He's got, you know, Huey and Dewey and Stewie and Louie, and I don't know all the names of his fucking kids. But let's not pass judgment on someone just because you think you know what his financial situation is, right? Foley is also a very frugal guy. He talked about that in his first book. Friends of his have always made fun of him for it. As a matter of fact, I think on one of those Storytime episodes on the network, I forget who it was, but they were telling a story about walking into... Oh, it was Triple H. Triple H was talking about walking into the hotel lobby after a show one night, and he found Foley, I think, sleeping on the couch with, like, newspaper over him. Because he looked like a homeless bum, because he was trying to save money so he wouldn't have to pay for a room for the night. That's Mick Foley. He has flat out told fans, I do not want you to start crowdfunding campaigns for me to pay for this. I am not soliciting any money from anybody. I don't want donations. I don't want your charity. So, again, for that reason, I would say let's not get on the guy too much here. I do think it was not a wise move for him to put all of this out there, because what the hell do you think people are going to do? People love this guy. Now he's coming out publicly. He's putting out a blog. I need hip surgery. It's $60,000. I can't pay for hip surgery. People crowdfunded for surgery for Jake Roberts. They crowdfunded for Scott Hall. What did Mick Foley think would happen by coming out publicly and admitting this? So, it's really his own fault. Of course people were going to try to help. So, not the wisest move on his part, but there really is no reason for this guy not to have health insurance right now. And again, if he waits much longer, he's really going to be up Schitt's Creek without a paddle. So, whatever he's going to do, he better do it soon. And as for Vince and WWE, look, yes, it would be a nice thing for Vince McMahon to dip into his own pockets and help a guy who literally gave his body and threw his body off great heights for this man's company, especially since Vince has paid for people like Scott Hall and Sonny to go to rehab about 15,000 times. He apparently gave money, I don't know if he gave money or loaned it, but he gave money to Ric Flair years ago when he got into trouble with the IRS. He had tax problems, so he bailed out Ric Flair. Yes, it would be a nice gesture on Vince McMahon's part, but if Foley is not under contract, he's, you know, Vince is under no obligation to pay for anything. He doesn't have to pay a dime. We all make choices in life. Foley knew the risks. He had to know that he would need a whole bunch of things replaced later in his life. Knees, hips. There's really no excuse for him, of all people, given his history, to not have health insurance. Believe me, I know how important that is, unfortunately. So that's what makes me just go, why don't you have insurance? You had insurance, you missed the payment, like what's going on here? While we're on the subject of health insurance, may as well talk about this here. WWE is also not covering the cost for, I want to make sure I get his name right. I think it's John Yernay. I don't know if it's Yernet or Yernay is his real name. He goes by the name Mr. 450 outside of WWE. I know he's wrestled for a bunch of different promotions. Carlos Colon's promotion in Puerto Rico. He was a champion down there. He was the guy who blew out his knee on the first move of his match with Mustafa Ali on 205 Live this past week. Literally kicked Mustafa Ali right in the gut to start the match, and immediately something popped. Whatever happened, something appeared to be wrong. He was limping around. He wrestled another couple of minutes. The referee stopped the match a few times to check on him. The referee knew something was wrong. This guy's like, no, I'm okay. He was very clearly not okay. You could just tell by watching him run the ropes, and I use the word run very loosely here. He was more like hopping towards the ropes. He suffered a major knee injury. I don't know what the exact injury was, but it's pretty major, and he's going to need surgery. He needs an MRI done. And he has had to start a GoFundMe campaign to help pay for it because he doesn't have the money. Wrestlers now, they're coming forward. They're selling their gear. They're autographing gear to help this guy pay his medical expenses. I saw Lindsay Dorado on Instagram says he's going to autograph some masks that he's worn on Raw recently to auction off for his friend. It's really sad that he has to do this. Now, the issue of whether or not WWE is responsible to pay for his medical bills since he got hurt inside of a WWE ring, even if he isn't under contract, which I don't believe he is, all of that may be negated by the fact that he may have gone into the match with the knee injury already. Apparently, he may have hurt the knee in a match last month at an independent show. Yet, he has claimed, he has fought back against these allegations. I've seen him tweeting people. He has said, look, dude, I was cleared. He says, I was cleared by two doctors. So this whole thing is very weird. But if WWE thinks he went into the match hurt, If let's say they did evaluate him and they didn't see anything wrong, he was doing a good job of masking it, he may have known. I'm sure he knew he was probably hurting, but maybe he didn't say anything. Look, this is his big break. He doesn't want to fuck this up. You know, a lot of these guys, they tape this shit up and they go out there. They're like, all right, it can't be that bad. I'll tape it up, or if it's a little painful, I'm a tough guy. I can gut through the pain. It's going to be a short match. I got to do this. This could be my big break here in WWE. I'm guessing that's probably what happened here. And WWE looked at him and they didn't know anything and they said, all right. And after the fact, they figured out, wait a minute, he may have gone into this match with this injury. This was not caused in our ring. And so we're not going to pay for it. Because you came into this match, you came into our ring with a pre-existing injury. So if they think he went into the match hurt, I suspect that's why they're not paying for this. Because that's one thing WWE is very good about. If you get hurt on their watch, they take care of it, right? You could say a lot of things about WWE. We could have a whole conversation about why don't these wrestlers have health insurance through WWE? And that ties into the whole employee versus independent contractor thing, right? I bet all those executives in their ivory white tower there in Stamford, Connecticut, they've got great benefits. I've seen job postings go out for WWE and they even say great benefits package. And I'm sure health insurance is a big part of that. But those are employees. Wrestlers are not employees, even though they are. No, they're independent contractors. The whole thing is a fucking farce, and I've talked about this before, and they've gotten away with it for so many years, and now forget about it. If there was any hope of the government or somebody going after WWE, you could forget about that now. So they continue to get away with this, and the wrestlers are forced to go out and get health insurance, you know, on their own. In fact, I think WWE mandates that all of these guys have to go out and buy their own medical insurance, all of their talent. So it's not fair, but that's how it is. If you want to help him out, though, you can find his GoFundMe. Just type in Mr. 450 in the search bar on GoFundMe. It should come right up. I know he's looking to raise about $10,000, and I think he's just about halfway there. All right, Raw from Monday night. Raw Twitter poll, almost 1,900 votes. 19% thumbs up. That's what it was. It was 19% thumbs up. I was off by one. 81% thumbs down. Hell of a way to end the year. Going out on a high note. Yeah, this is a pretty dull show. It's the same matches over and over again. And I don't know, we get some of that on SmackDown too. I mean, look, up until recently, it was Dean Ambrose and AJ Styles over and over again. And I said, I'm sick of it. Enough already. And they've moved on from it. Now it's Ambrose has moved on to Miz, and Styles is doing something. I mean, they're going back to Cena now, but it's even worse on this show. It's like the same matches over and over and over. It's like this never-ending cycle. Bayley against Charlotte, Roman against Kevin Owens, which they expect to headline their next pay-per-view yet again for the championship, and yet they're giving it for free on television. With decisive finishes, not even like schmazes or like brawl into the crowd or something and get people excited to see a rematch. No. You know, it's not even just that we've seen them already multiple times, but we know there's more to come. This is not the end. It's just rematch after rematch after rematch. Now I know how Bill Murray felt. That being said, show wasn't a total lost cause. I have to give Stephanie McMahon props for her CM Punk burn. The fans once again trolled her with chants of CM Punk, as they always do in Chicago. And she came prepared. She told them, if you guys can keep that up for another 2 minutes and 15 seconds, you'd last 1 second longer than Punk did. And everyone in the crowd's like, ooh. Thing is, you just know. You just know she was waiting to use that line. She knew the Punk chance would come. As soon as she got to the airport, she says, "Ah, I'm in Chicago. I already know what to expect." She knew it going in. She was so excited. Go back and look at her smile when those chants first started up. She was probably practicing that in the mirror all day. She was so happy when she said this. You could just tell she hates this guy's guts so much. It's like she doesn't even hide it. Anyway. I also like the booking of Braun Strowman as a monster. I like the part where he mowed down a fan in the crowd. That was my favorite part of Raw, was Braun Strowman just mowing down a fan in the crowd. Sami Zayn interfered in his match against Seth Rollins, okay? And Braun chased him into the crowd and just barreled over a fan who was either taking a photo with his phone or he was periscoping or he was on Facebook Live, whatever the fuck he was doing. Pay attention when a 350-pound man comes running at you, you schmuck. The only other thing I really liked was Chris Jericho calling Charlie Caruso Chuck. That actually made me laugh out loud. That was the only laugh out loud moment I had all night. Aside from when the Raw rating came in under the SmackDown rating. Neville, who also beat TJ Perkins on the show, he cut a promo after his match blaming the fans for his change in attitude. He says it's the dumb American fans who insult his accent and think his personality is too bland for TV. So basically, fans is the code word for creative. I know this because the fans did not make fun of his accent. They made fun of his ears. That's why his whole rap on the fans just rings so hollow to me, but I guess they needed a reason to turn him, and so that was as good as any. I'm just happy to see the guy finally being used, and I think he's killing it so far as a heel. I didn't know what to expect when they turned him. I thought his moveset and everything, you know, I was like, I don't know if he could pull it off. It's only been a few weeks, though, but so far, so good. I don't know, you know, I know some of you are actually watching 205 Live. I'm still watching it. Did you see the way he stared down that little kid when he was coming down for his match against Rich Swann? He made that kid so uncomfortable. Now his mother's going to go write a long, boring Facebook post about it. We had a controversial segment on this show that really shouldn't have been, but it was. It was the Bayley Bear segment. I think you know what I'm talking about here. There was a segment where Bayley gave a bear. She has the whole Bayley Bear. She gave one that was decked out in polka dots, basically made up to look like Dusty Rhodes. And she gave it to Goldust, kind of in honor of his father. And Goldust was very touched by this. Anderson and Gallows came up, and they were, you know, calling them nerds. And he grabbed the Dusty Bear, and he ripped the head off of the bear, and he laughed, and they walked away. Cody Rhodes saw the segment and was very upset. He tweeted this. He said, "Not going to say something mean or blow a whistle. All I can say is that whoever produced that, I hope they never know what this feels like." And then later he said, I turned something private to public. I'm not perfect. I just miss him." Cody misses his dad. That's it, you know? I mean, I miss my dad. I get it. I know what it feels like. And for him, this was also the day after Christmas. It's the holiday season. So it's gotta hurt him even more, you know, not to have his dad around. And then to see that in like a totally meaningless segment. Not that it would make it so much better if it was like the main event segment, but a totally meaningless, stupid throwaway segment on the show. Look, I've seen far worse from this company on TV, far more offensive things. I watched this, I wouldn't say this offended me. I just thought, all right, whatever, it's stupid. Here's a bunch of geeks on TV doing geeky things. This was not like Eddie's in Hell level stuff here. But put yourself in Cody's shoes. I totally get where he's coming from. I wish people would lay off the guy. I mean, he got a lot of support, but he also had people who were like, oh, you know, this is PC and like, come on. Like, put yourself in this guy's position. He's in a very unique position here. It's not just a bitter ex-WWE guy commenting on a stupid angle. you know, his dad is part of the whole thing. I guess Goldust, I mean, I shouldn't say Goldust didn't have an issue with it. Who the hell knows? Maybe he did. But Goldust is in a position where he's told what to do and he does it. I don't see Goldust making waves about stuff. But it bothered Cody. I totally get it. They didn't have to do it. And, you know, that's all there is to it. I sympathize with the guy. Tomorrow night in Tampa, it's the first Raw of 2017. We've got Braun Strowman and Sami Zayn in a last man standing match. We've got the return of Bill Goldberg. As far as I'm concerned, it's a new year. It's a new year. I'm giving a clean slate to this show. Maybe I shouldn't be doing that. I've given them the benefit of the doubt many times before and I've been burned, right? There's a reason I still get people who tweet me and, you know, email me and say, look, I don't even watch Raw, dude. Like, I gave up on Raw a long time ago. I just follow things on your show. I can't stand it. I can't watch it. I can't sit through it. I feel you. I've had the same feelings the last few weeks. But it's a new year, and again, clean slate. They have a real chance now to turn things around. They're heading into their most exciting period of the year. You know, Rumble to WrestleMania is their biggest period of the year. There is no reason for these shows to be as horrendously dull as they have been. There is no reason for Raw to consistently get 15% thumbs up, 18% thumbs up, and for SmackDown to be doing so much better. In fact, this is a chance for them to start fresh and to copy what works on SmackDown. Raw can be like that D student in class who keeps looking over the nerd's shoulder trying to copy all of his answers to the test, okay? SmackDown is that nerd and I give Raw permission to copy what works. It's okay to copy if you're copying something that works. And I think if Raw can just borrow from whatever's been working for SmackDown the last few weeks, then Raw will be a lot better off in 2017 because of it. And they've already got, you know, a good start here. They've promoted a couple of big things in advance. I want to see them do that more often. I don't want to see the same matches over and over again. I'd like to see them take some of the cruiserweights and break them out. I know they have a division, and they're trying to get the division over. They have their own separate show for these guys. But that doesn't mean you can't take a Cedric Alexander or a Neville and put them against a Seth Rollins or somebody like that. Break them out of the pack. Give us some fresh matches we've never seen before. Those are the types of things they have to work on. I am hopeful that they will start to do that. I don't know why, but I am. And as far as I'm concerned, new year, fresh slate. Let's give them a chance. See if they could turn things around.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
NXT, this was the show from Osaka earlier this month, last month, I guess I should say now. They re-aired Nakamura's NXT title win over Samoa Joe in full this time, which was a better match, which begs the question, why the hell didn't they just air it that way the first time? Spoiler alert, by the way, Nakamura won. Oni Lorcan beat Andrade Cien Almas. That was a big surprise to me. I did not see that coming. Exploder off the top rope for the win. Almas was back in Japan. He had a great deal of success working there as La Sombra. He actually came out in his La Sombra mask, probably thinking to himself, what have I done? How long do I have left on my contract? He didn't wrestle with the mask on. He took it off. The announcers mentioned that he once beat Shinsuke Nakamura to become the IWGP Intercontinental Champion. And here he is, back in Japan, losing to Oni Lorcan in the opener. Not to take anything away from Oni Lorcan. He's a tough dude. Scrappy guy. But this was not the outcome I was expecting. Peyton Royce and Billy Kay beat Aaliyah and Liv Morgan. DIY beat Tajiri and Akira Tozawa for the NXT Tag Team titles. To retain their NXT Tag Team titles. This is the only thing worth going out of your way to see on this show. Unless you never saw Joe and Nakamura, you should watch that. This is a fun match. DIY retain with their stereo kicks to the head to Tozawa. Can't wait to see Tozawa on Raw wrestling to dead silence. But on 205 Live, I think he'll be a welcome addition. Asuka and Nia Jax for the Women's Championship. I hated this match. Hated it! Nia Jax looked like she belonged in NXT watching this match. She did not look like a Raw star coming down to NXT to challenge for the championship. She looked like she belonged in NXT, which frankly is where she should be. That's why she looked that way. but that's neither here nor there. They worked a big girl versus small girl match. Asuka was throwing everything at her. She sold for most of the match. She did not look like the wrecking machine that she's been for months now on NXT, steamrolling through everybody. She just sold and sold and sold and sold and sold. And was more of a babyface than normal, and that makes sense. She was in Japan. They had to know that going home, she was going to be beloved by the fans. And so I understand that, but I just thought the match was boring. I didn't like this at all. Go watch the DIY match with Tajiri and Tozawa. And again, watch the main event if you've not seen the full version. But that's all you need to watch. The rest of this show is very much skippable. This week, they're airing the show from Melbourne in Australia with the Joe Nakamura cage match. I don't know offhand what the other matches are. But hopefully they'll be better than some of the ones they had on this show. Lucha Underground. Prince Puma has declared his allegiance to Vampiro, so now Vampiro is his master. Vampiro needs a stable of a few different guys. That's what Vampiro needs. Puma came out, he attacked Mil Muertes during his match with Jeremiah Crane. Crane was getting his ass handed to him up to that point. He ended up stealing a quick win with a jump kick. There was a spot here where Katrina licked her hand. Crane was kind of in the ropes, and Katrina licked her hand and her fingers, rubbed it on Crane's face, and I just had to pause for a second. Just, my God. Some weird dude came up to Sexy Star backstage and handed her a gift box that he said somebody gave him to give to her. And when she opened it, you guessed it, it was the spider, and Sexy Star roared with rage. I think I just figured out David Arquette's gimmick for Lucha Underground. Remember I said David Arquette's a fan of the show, and he pitched an idea once to the producers that went nowhere for him to come in as like a drunken manager? I got the perfect idea now to get David Arquette into this show here. He could be an exterminator. He could be an exterminator that Sexy Star hires to follow her around wherever she goes. Like the Orkin Man. That can be David Arquette. Son of Havoc and Angelico against Jack Evans and PJ Black. Just as Angelico was back, he is gone once again on a simple springboard knee off. I say simple, but I sure as hell couldn't do that. I think the word simple is relative here. Simple for him. This was a very simple move for him. It's ironic that for all of the death-defying dives this guy does, literally diving like 25, 30 feet off balconies on this show multiple times we've seen. And he lands, and he gets caught by people, and he lands it, and he's perfectly fine. It's a move like this where he gets hurt. He landed awkwardly. He kind of springboarded himself off the ropes. And when he hit the mat, I guess he planted his arm awkwardly, and he dislocated his elbow. They went to the finish maybe within a minute or two after that. Jack Evans got the pin on Son of Havoc. I don't know if that was the planned finish, but that's the finish we got. And it's a tough break for Angelico because he was set to feud with Johnny Mundo for the Lucha Underground title, so that sucks. Tejano pinned Cage in match 4 of their best of 5 series to even the series up at 2 wins apiece and to force a game 5, if you will. You knew this was setting something else up, though. I mean, even though they billed this as the main event, this match went 2 minutes. There was still plenty of time left in the show. Cage got busted open on the exposed turnbuckle. He was bleeding like a faucet. Dario Cueto came out of his office. He said the ultimate opportunity that these guys are fighting for in this series is so great, it is so awesome, that we shouldn't have to wait another week. We're going to have match 5 right now. Cage is just bleeding like a stuck pig. Guy barely gets a rest period before the next match begins. Dario made it falls count anywhere, and they had themselves a pretty wild brawl. Out of the ring, up and down the bleachers, all throughout the crowd. This got pretty crazy, although I thought Matt Stryker was a little over the top. I know, Matt Stryker being over the top, big shock. But I thought he was being a little over the top when he was talking about how when the match was over, we would remember this match for years to come. It was something like that, or like, we'll remember where we were when we saw this match. No, we won't. Shut up. I'll probably forget about this, in all honesty, in 2 weeks. Let's not get carried away here. Cage won with the old Steiner screwdriver in the middle of the ring. Dario came back out of his office. He said the ultimate opportunity that Cage won is so powerful These people don't deserve to know what it is. I can't give it to you in front of them. Come into my office. And so he goes into the office and he presents him with a box. And inside the box is a special amulet, which Cage at first rejects because it's a fucking amulet. This guy didn't wrestle 5 fucking matches just to win some dumb amulet. And Dario says, well, at least do me this one favor. Try it on. And Cage puts on the glove. I swear to God, this thing looked like a Nintendo glove I had when I was a kid. Was it the Nintendo Power Glove? That's exactly what it looked like. It looked like something that you would use to play Nintendo or something you would see out of a comic book. He puts this thing on. He looks like Dr. Doom. And it gives him some special powers. You see like little bolts of electricity are pulsing through it. He grabs Dario by the throat. He lifts him up about a foot off the ground with it. He says, you know what? On second thought, I think I will keep this thing. And that's how the show ended. This was like it reminded me of like an origin story straight out of a comic book. Like this is the making of a comic book villain here. Cage certainly has the physique for one, I'll tell you that. So we'll see where this goes. Remember, Dario and Lorenzo Lamas had their conversation about finding a host body for something, and it was supposed to be the winner of this series here between Cage and Tejano. So we'll see how that ties into things. Think of the absurdity of the last sentence that I just said. I love it. I love it. I really hope my prediction is wrong about the fate of Lucha Underground. I'm going to be so bummed if we do see the end of the show this year, but I don't know. I don't have a good feeling. Time for mailbag questions. If you have questions, you can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Dustin in Pico Vera, California. I figure, like many others, it's time they do John Cena versus Undertaker at WrestleMania. Even though it's the best option and long overdue, I'm wondering if singles matches are all that's left for Undertaker at WrestleMania. Is it possible to use him in tag, triple threat, or other match types to create a must-see match with a good story? You could always come up with a good story for it. I mean, if you have people who are good storytellers, you can come up with a good story for almost anything. I could come up with a good story for Vince Russo sitting here right now if I really wanted to. In fact, I think I had once made a tongue-in-cheek prediction. It might have been last year on the podcast, a year ago, when I said Kevin Owens is going to become WWE champion, which I wasn't far off from, and he's going to be managed by Vince Russo. And in fact, I really don't want to see that, but I could come up with a good story of how you introduce Vince Russo as a manager for, of all people, Kevin Owens. And I bet I could find a way to make it work, even though it sounds like a horrendously horrible idea. Having Vince Russo anywhere back on TV, I think, is a horrendously horrible idea. But you could come up with a good story for almost anything. I think the only tag match with Undertaker that you could do is something where you reunite him with Kane as the Brothers of Destruction. Undertaker and Kane, that it's never going to get old. People are always going to pop for it. The visual of them side by side, fist up in the air, it's always going to be cool. So you can always do that. But then who do they face? In fact, the only team that would really make sense if you look at the roster right now would be the Wyatts. And that's been done, right? Been there, done that. I mean, maybe they could drag it out long enough where you get to WrestleMania and that's where Randy Orton finally turns on them. But I figure the turn is probably coming before Mania. And we end up with Bray and Randy on that show. But, you know, again, we've already seen Undertaker and Kane against the Wyatts, and it wasn't like it was so good. It was like Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker, where people are calling for an encore. Undertaker, however many matches he has left, and there are not many, they should be singles matches. They should not be tag matches. They should not be triple threats. They should not be handicap matches. They should not be fatal four ways. It should be straight up singles, one on one. The biggest possible matches that you could do with Undertaker. And again, that's why I think Cena-Undertaker is the biggest possible match left to do with him. Connor from Indianapolis. If CM Punk did return, he won't. But if he did, what brand should he be sent to? SmackDown to give it more star power or Raw to feud with Stephanie? How about we get rid of Stephanie? How about that? How about we get Stephanie the hell off TV? I'd like that idea more. I would put Punk on Raw. I think Raw needs him more than SmackDown does. I think Punk and Kevin Owens could actually be a lot of fun. Chris from Ajax, Ontario, Canada. I love how, like, each week I learn of these new provinces. Like, I've never heard of Ajax, Ontario. With the Rumble coming up, I wanted to ask what you thought of this scenario. Finn Balor wins the Royal Rumble, jumps to SmackDown, and challenges AJ Styles for the WWE Championship, assuming that he doesn't drop it first to John Cena. The club then gets traded to SmackDown sometime before Mania. They come out during the match. They have us believing that they're going to help AJ, but ultimately they turn on him, they join Finn Balor, and they form the Balor Club. Well, I'll tell you what, if they went with your idea, that would make two of my predictions for 2017 correct. Because I'm predicting AJ Styles goes back babyface, and I'm predicting Finn Balor goes heel, and he does hook up with Anderson and Gallows, although I'm predicting it's on Raw. But they do form a new club, so sure. I think it would make me look great if that happened. But I actually like that idea. I think the more I think about that, I like that idea. I would be down for that, absolutely. Mucho Macho from Fort Lauderdale. It's seemingly been forever since we had a truly unexpected Royal Rumble winner. Who could you say was the last Royal Rumble winner that truly shocked or surprised you? Yeah, we haven't had very many of those, have we? Most surprising Royal Rumble winner. I'd probably have to go with Del Rio. I can't remember if it was obvious at the time or not, but just looking back, I don't think that he's somebody I would have pegged to win the Royal Rumble. I know he got a big push pretty much right out of the gate after he debuted, but again, I don't know that I saw him winning that. And that was the biggest Rumble they ever did. 40 men out of 40 guys? Yeah, I don't think I would have picked Alberto Del Rio. Josh from Worcester, Massachusetts, in your opinion, who had the best Royal Rumble strategy between Jerry Lawler hiding under the ring, Vince McMahon doing commentary, Road Dogg hugging the bottom rope, and Rikishi throwing out people one by one? Me and my friend used to talk about how if we were ever in the Royal Rumble, we would joke about how we would hug the bottom rope the way the Road Dogg did, whatever year that was. It might have been 2000, I don't know. But I guess what Lawler did probably makes more sense, hiding under the ring, because then at least people can't kick you. They can't kick you, they can't stomp on you. So I would, like, what I would do personally, I would take like an iPad. I would hide an iPad or something under the ring before the show, and then when the time is right and I'm in the Rumble, I'd sneak under, and I would just chill out under there, and I would watch the match on the network on the iPad. And when the moment is right, I would come back out, and I would dump the guy out of the ring. That would be my strategy. And then I would point to the WrestleMania sign like all these other dumbasses do. Point to the sign! Point to the sign! You know how I feel about that WrestleMania sign. It's my mortal enemy. Tom from Philly. The Winged Eagle is one of the best-looking belts ever made. Goddamn right about that. Do you think the fact that everyone who has ever worn that belt, minus one, that being Psycho Sid, has been inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame further solidifies the greatness of that belt? Hell yeah! Hell yeah, it does. Winged Eagle, baby. That title has more cachet, or it had more cachet back then, the WWE title did, because it was the belt, right? In that company, that was it. You had the Intercontinental, the tag team, maybe the women's, but that WWE championship was the title. You didn't have multiple titles the way they do today. You also had a lot of larger-than-life guys who held that thing back in the day. You have very few people on the roster now, either roster, Raw or SmackDown, who feel larger-than-life. Very few people feel the way, like, Hogan and Savage and Flair and Undertaker and even Shawn Michaels felt back then. Those guys felt larger-than-life. They felt really special. And I look at the roster now. I mean, they got some special guys. AJ Styles, he's a special kind of guy. Is AJ Styles larger than life? Not really. Roman Reigns, I guess you could kind of consider him larger than life. He's like a big superhero, but I don't see Roman in the same class with those guys. I mean, John Cena maybe would be the closest thing, I suppose. He never had the Winged Eagle. But I think that's why people look back fondly on that. That title goes back to a period where the biggest stars in wrestling history had it. Hogan, Bret, Shawn, Flair, Austin had it, if only for one night. Like, the biggest names you could think of, they all held that championship, and that thing was the most coveted thing. I mean, go back on the network and watch Raw, the end of 1996 into 1997, and this four-way, like it was Undertaker, it was Sid, it was Bret, it was Shawn. I guess you throw Austin in there. So there's five guys, and those five guys, like they all had attitude, they were all pissed off, and they were all fighting over one thing. They were fighting over the WWE title. They were fighting over that Winged Eagle belt, and that belt felt like the most important freaking thing in the entire world. Like everybody wanted it. It gave you power, it gave you money, it gave you everything. And I don't really get that same kind of feeling now. And maybe that is because they have two titles instead of one, but it's just not the same. So yeah, that title had a lot more cachet back then than it did now. And it doesn't help that I do think that design wise, I know there's a lot of love for Big Gold. I love Big Gold too. I think it's a beautiful belt, but come on. The Winged Eagle is way up at the top. Mucho also has a buy or sell. Which debut was more impactful, looking both at the debut itself and what they did right after? Kevin Owens' main roster debut or Chris Jericho's WWF debut? See, now that's an unfair question, okay? Because you're really asking two different things. If you're asking who had the more impactful debut on the night of their actual debut, then Jericho wins. Because on his very first night, he interrupts The Rock, who was one of the biggest stars on the planet in all of wrestling. And he was a defection from another team. This was Chris Jericho jumping ship from WCW to WWE. That was a big deal and something that people had been waiting months for. And he had the countdown clock going for weeks on TV building up to it. So that was a much bigger deal. But if it's the night of their debut plus what they did after, so basically, to answer your question, I'm actually going to buy on Kevin Owens, and I'm going to sell on Chris Jericho. They didn't really do much with Jericho those first couple of months after he debuted. I mean, he had that first night with The Rock, and then what happened? I think he feuded with Ken Shamrock. He had Mr. Hughes as his friggin' bodyguard. Then I think he had Howard Finkel as his lackey. Then he moved into the feud with Chyna for the Intercontinental title. Owens, on his very first night, he beat up John Cena. Stomped on the U.S. title. He wrestled Cena on pay-per-view. His very first match, he pins John Cena clean in the middle of the ring. Not very many people can say that they did that, let alone in their first match on the main roster. AJ Styles did it last year, but wasn't his first match on the main roster. So I would say that that's more impactful than what they had Jericho doing after that first night with The Rock. But again, you get a little sneaky way there of asking your question. Ask it a different way, I might give you a different answer. Speaking of debuts, Joseph from Silsby, Texas, home of the World's Strongest Man. Buy or sell on which non-made WWE star had a better first year in WWE? Ric Flair in 1992 or AJ Styles in 2016? 1992, now you're talking my language. Flair, well, first of all, let's back up a little bit here, okay? Flair did not actually debut in 92. He debuted in the fall of 91. He was the sole, I think, he was the sole survivor, I think, in the Survivor Series match. So he did that. That same night, he comes back out. He calls Hulk Hogan the WWF title. Okay, so right away, he's in a feud with Hulk Hogan over who the real world's champion is. They had a bunch of house show matches. He comes in number three in the Royal Rumble, earlier than anyone who previously entered the Rumble to win. Wins the WWF title in his first Royal Rumble. Still the greatest Royal Rumble match they've ever done. Then he co-main events WrestleMania for the championship, defending against Randy Savage. I love the whole "she was mine before she was yours" angle with Elizabeth. I loved it. And then, I don't know what happened. Flair didn't even wrestle at Wembley on that SummerSlam card. Didn't even have a match. He did win the WWF title one more time, but that second match with Savage sucked. It was so bad that Vince made him go back out and retape it a second time. I can't say that what we ended up seeing was much better. But then a few weeks later, he drops the championship at a house show to Bret Hart. That would, up to that point, that would pretty much cover his first full year. And that's still a pretty eventful year, but it's not like he had this long list of like blow away memorable matches like AJ did last year. Styles debuted in the Rumble match. He doesn't win like Flair did. But I thought it was a cool little, yeah, I don't know if they did this on purpose, I doubt it, but Styles entered the Royal Rumble match last year in the same number three spot that Flair did when he won it. Then he went on to wrestle Chris Jericho at WrestleMania. Doesn't win, but he ends up with two straight pay-per-view main events against Roman Reigns, both of which he loses, but both of which are Match of the Year candidates. Then he gets three straight wins over the company's biggest star. Not even Flair could do that. He could never beat Hogan. And then AJ wins the WWE title, which he still has now, over 100 days and counting. He was the MVP of WWE. He was the MVP of that company in his debut year. So it's a tough call because AJ had much better matches than Flair did during that first run that he had. For Flair, it really was just the Rumble match and the match with Savage at WrestleMania. That was it. But you didn't have brands back then. You had one brand, right? The brand. You had four big pay-per-views all year. And not 15 or however many they have now. Flair was a top guy, but he was never really the top guy, right? Hogan was still positioned as the top guy, at least through WrestleMania. And then by the time Hogan left at WrestleMania, Savage bummed the belt off of Flair, and he took over as the guy. So Flair, you know, they wouldn't give Flair a match the last card on that show. He was in the middle of the show, and he was the champion. That was the first time since the first WrestleMania that WWE Championship did not headline the show. And like I said, once Hogan left, Savage took over with the title. You know, I'm still inclined to buy on Ric Flair, though, and sell on AJ, only because Flair won the title in the Rumble and was way higher on the card at WrestleMania than AJ was in his first year. Flair cost Hogan the title at Survivor Series against The Undertaker. Flair was involved in some big-time stuff because Flair was one of the biggest stars in the world. AJ came into this company one of the biggest wrestling stars in the world, but I don't know that I would put him on that same level as Flair was at that time. Like if we're comparing the two, so Flair came in, he did big things. AJ came in and did big things, but I think it took him a little bit longer. So I'm going to buy on Ric Flair. I'm going to sell on AJ Styles, but just barely. And it really does depend on how much emphasis you want to put on match quality. If you're a match quality fanatic, then AJ wins, hands down. But I'm looking at this overall and the other main eventers they were involved in. The key for me is Flair came in and right off the bat, he was involved with guys like Hogan and Piper. It did not take long. When Flair first came in, he had two feuds going concurrently. And I don't know why he never had a TV match or a pay-per-view match with Piper, but he had a feud with Piper and a feud with Hogan right out of the gate. And let me tell you something, back then, it don't get much bigger than that. AJ took him a little while longer, but it's just a different time now. It's a different era. I'm going to buy on Flair. Denise from London. I don't know if it's Dennis. Dennis, I think it is, from London. Buy or sell the Elimination Chamber match from Survivor Series 2002 or the Elimination Chamber match from New Year's Revolution 2005. The one from 2005 had Triple H winning, I believe. See, I don't remember much about that match. I just know 05 would have been the build to Triple H and Batista, so Triple H had to be the world champion. And so I think, if I'm remembering correctly, that was the one they were still kind of planting the seeds for Triple H and Batista. The one from 2002, I remember because it was the first, number one, and also because RVD crushed Triple H's throat, and at the very next pay-per-view, RVD, he wasn't on the card. You know where RVD was? RVD, they were doing cutaways to RVD at the WWE restaurant in Times Square, which I'm sure was not a coincidence. But that first chamber match had this great finish with Shawn Michaels, who had just come back only a few months earlier, his first match back in 4.5 years, and now he's in this first Elimination Chamber match. He gets the super kick on Triple H, he gets the pin, the confetti is coming down in Madison Square Garden, it's a big confetti bath at MSG, he wins the championship, the only time he wins the championship in the 8 years that he got on that second comeback. I would buy on that one. I'm buying on 2002. I'm selling on 2005. So that'll wrap up the mailbag. Do more questions next week. Right now it's time for this week in Sound Off History. This is, of course, episode 476 that I'm recording, the first episode of 2017, but episode 76 was way back on July 19, 2009. I talked about Brock Lesnar's win over Frank Mir, or as Brock would say, Frank Mir, at UFC 100, and also Seth Green's performance on Monday Night Raw, the first celebrity guest host on Raw since they began the concept. They had a couple of wrestlers do it first, remember? It was like Batista, I think, maybe, and Ted DiBiase, and then it was Seth Green. Episode 176, August 27th, 2011. That was the summer of Punk. I recorded this show just outside the evacuation zone for a pretty bad storm here that hit New York. This was just days after we were rocked here by an earthquake. See, even natural disasters can't stop me from doing this podcast. It's no wonder I'm going on 7 years almost without missing a single episode. I think at the end of May, it'll be 7 years since I missed a show. I also covered Todd Grisham leaving WWE for ESPN, and I thanked everybody for helping me reach 1,000 Twitter followers. And here I am now on my way to 21,000. It's pretty cool. Episode 276, June 2nd. 2013, talked about the arrival of the Wyatt family, talked about the state of TNA 1 year after going live on Spike TV, and this was a big discussion topic. Will Aces and Eights help build any new... I can't even say it. Will Aces and Eights help build any new stars? Yeah. I think we know the answer to that. Episode 376, March 30th, 2015. This was the WrestleMania wrap-up show I did on location in San Jose with Noah Mark and Brian Blay discussing a very enjoyable WrestleMania 31 with Seth Rollins winning the WWE title and why it was so ridiculous for Triple H to beat Sting. And I know Sting has since said that he wanted it that way because he genuinely thought it was going to be his last match and he wanted his last match to be putting someone else over. But that doesn't make me roll my eyes any less than it did when it happened. That we finally get a big Sting match at WrestleMania after all these years. 30 years people have been waiting for this. Almost 30 years. And he loses to Triple H. Just cry in shame. Cry in shame. A year ago, so that ends the whole This Week in History Sound Off edition. Although it was a year ago this week. January 6th, I want to say it was January 6th, I think, was the date that I found out about the my blood cancer stuff. Yeah, it's been a year. It's hard to believe, but it's been a year. That was quite the way to start 2016. You see, so when people say, like, oh, 2016 wasn't so bad, like, you know what? For this podcast, it was great. We had our best year ever, biggest growth. Hopefully we can build on that in 2017. Talking from a personal standpoint, yeah, 2016 was a pretty shitty year. And I've talked about other stuff, you know, with my mom and things going on health-wise in the family and stuff. And yeah, 2016 actually was a very shitty year. And so here's hoping 2017 has a lot more in store, a lot more positive things in store. And for the people who have been asking, by the way, because I really just haven't been talking about it, I really don't want to take up much time talking about that kind of stuff, unless there's something to talk about, or if it's going to cause me to miss a show or something like that. It hasn't. I haven't missed a single show. It has not changed anything. It has not changed a single thing in terms of my daily life or what I do or how I prepare for this show or anything. It has not changed anything. And, I don't expect it to, hopefully not for a very long time. It's kind of in maintenance mode, I guess you would say right now. Right now everything is copacetic. Things are in check as far as they can be in check. And, you know, every few months I go and I get things checked out and hopefully get a positive report and we go from there. So when I have something new to tell, I will tell. But otherwise, I'm doing just fine. Wrestle Kingdom. New Japan Pro Wrestling's Wrestle Kingdom 11 show, which I'm going to throw another prediction in here. I forgot to mention this earlier when I did the predictions, but I'll say it now. I predict that Wrestle Kingdom will once again be the best pay-per-view of the year. It is the first, and it will be the best. That is, there have been pretty consistent in this the last few years. Wrestle Kingdom the last couple years has been an amazing show. I suspect that this year will not be much different. I think Kenny Omega has something to prove. He had quite the 2016 for himself, and I think 2017 is going to be an even bigger year for Kenny Omega. I think he made himself a big star that one day when he does go to WWE, and I believe he will, I don't think it'll be this year, but when he goes, he'll be a much bigger star for it, just like AJ Styles, I think, was a much bigger star for having gone to Japan and become the IWGP champion and had the success overseas that he had, you know, he had in TNA, but that really put him on another level. I feel like that's what we're seeing right now with Kenny Omega, and I think he's going to win the championship. I think he'll beat Okada. I think it's going to finally elevate him to that next level, and I think he's going to have a kick-ass year. And so that's the main event. They've got a bunch of other matches, great matches lined up on this show. Am I going to watch it? People have been asking me. I'm hoping I can. I'm not going to watch it live, but I am hoping at some point by the end of the week to at least see the main matches somehow. I can't say that I'm going to have a full review of the show on the podcast next week because I don't know that I'm going to be seeing the full show, but I'm going to make the attempt to at least see the key matches at some point over the next week, and you should too, because I'm telling you, this is going to be a hell of a show, probably the best one all year. You can still vote for us in the Wrestling Radio Awards. Go to WrestlingRadioAwards.com, type in Solid Monster Sounds Off where it says Show of the Year. And then when you submit, go back to the form and you can vote for my interview with Bob Holly on the Sound Off. Write that in under Male Interview of the Year. So the nomination process continues. You can vote once a day, every day in each category. Follow me on Twitter, @Solomonster. You can also subscribe to the YouTube channel. The Solomonster is my username officially on YouTube. Couple new brand new Sound Off Gamer videos are up there for you to enjoy. And of course, I will put more pay-per-view reviews up there in 2017. I expect to have one up for the Royal Rumble. That's all bonus content. I have a whole YouTube channel full of bonus content, and you can find it all there. And subscribe. And I don't think I have anything else to promote that I haven't promoted. Oh, the Rumble Pool. Yeah, get in on the Royal Rumble Pool. Again, if you're not in the Facebook group yet, find it, apply, I will approve you. Send me a note so I know you're a real person. I'll get you in there, and all you have to do is like the post. And if you do not see the post pinned to the top, because it may not be pinned the next couple days, just search for it. Search for Zach Hulker, Z-A-C-K-H-O-L-K-E-R. He was the one who put the post together. Find it, like it, and you're in. It's a fun thing to do. We've done it the last 3 years, and again, we've already shattered our record so far. Well over 800 people and counting. So definitely get in on that. So we're going to wrap up the first show of 2017. This will be our 10th year. I started this podcast in November of 2007. And I want our 10th year to be the best. So keep telling people. Keep sharing all the links. Support the show in any way that you're able to, whether that is a PayPal donation. If you can't, use the Audible link, buy a shirt. Or just spread the word. But I appreciate everyone's help. Leaving a review also helps. We are a 5-star rated podcast in iTunes. You can leave a review. You can do the same thing in Stitcher. So I am most grateful for all of your support, and especially the diehards who have been there since day one. I mean, going on 10 years, that's pretty freaking amazing. So thank you all. We'll be back with episode 477 next weekend. Until then, be well, stay safe. Have yourselves a great start to the new year, and we will see you right back here for more Sound Off next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster Sounds Off.
This Impact show has moved so many times. It's got more fucking moves than Bruno Mars, this show does. Don't believe me, just watch. Impact started out on Friday, then moved to Saturday, Thursday, then they moved it to Monday. They got slaughtered, so they moved it back to Thursday, then they moved it to Wednesday, Friday again, then back to Wednesday, Tuesday, and now back to Thursday. It's like the Big Show of TV shows. It's turned 1,000 times already, and the only time people pay any attention to it is when it makes them laugh.
Monster Sounds Off. Since 2007, the Solomonster Sounds Off.
available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solo Monsters, sound off.